Let's talk about, I'm a big one on auditioning microphones. We've mentioned favorites. Now, when somebody stands up to sing, I'm not going to leave you live guys out, but we talked about this earlier, and you've pretty much said those are your starting places. Ben, when an artist comes in that you're not familiar with, that you've never worked with before, how many microphones do you put up, or where, what is your starting point?
Probably three microphones. I've got my kind of three favorites that I know are probably going to sound really good and start with them. I have kind of mixed feelings on the mic shootout because particularly if you're really going for vocals that day, you know, I'd rather not burn the vocalist out or blow their vibe at the expense of getting the perfect mic, because I think in the mix I can make a good performance but a lesser recording sound good, but it's hard to make a bad performance sound good down the road. So I'd rather stick with a few mics that I know are going to probably sound good, do a verse and a chorus on each one, print it, decide, and then get to it without destroying their, you know, mental capacity to sing. So,
have you ever put up three and all three of them sounded bad?
I don't recall a chance, but okay. A shot when I've done that. But, I'm lucky enough to work with really good singers, so they sound pretty good on about any microphone. So,
and you're also doing that shootout usually when they've just got there, they're not really warmed up or opened up, and, they don't really know the song. Not comfortable yet in the studio, so, you know, for me it's kind of a drag because you just know it's going to change, you know.
Right.
Half an hour after they've opened up, you'd pick something else.
Yeah.
And usually I'll let the artist in on it. Sometimes artists don't want to know, you know, they don't want to be involved with the producer. They'll just say, go with what you think is right. But if it's up, you know, if the artist is going to have a say, you've got to go with what sounds good in their phones. You know, no matter what I want to use, you know, a lot of times it comes down to what feels good, you know, what's going to make them get the performance they want.
Exactly. Now, do you have somebody, I don't know how often you work with artists that you've not worked with before, but do you have them singing to two or three different mics, or do you use what you know?
I'll pretty much use what I know.
Okay.
Rather than not waste time and be more efficient, I would probably start, find out how loud they sing, go from there, pick a microphone to use.
Okay.
As with them, like he was saying, we kind of have the liberty to use what we want. The artists, I'm very fortunate that the artists trust us enough to pick a microphone for them to use, and we can take anything out there and tell them to sing in it, and they will, you know. They're very lenient on letting us pick the tool that we want to use, and instead of them saying, I don't like this, I want to use something else, they pretty much, if we take it out there, they'll use it. And I guess I'm pretty picky, so I'll just want to find the best one for them to use. And so far, they've been okay with it.
Cool. How do you approach it?
Usually, I ask the artist if they mind, you know, doing a shootout. But if I haven't worked with the artist before and I don't know the song and things like that, I have three mics that I always have in mind, but I've had situations where those don't work on that artist, and then it's time to, you know,
I'm glad I'm not the only one.
Find out, you know, what works best with their vocal, you know. But my friend here has mentioned that, you know, if the artist doesn't know the song, that's a big problem, because you can pick one mic that sounds great, and two, 3 hours later, you hate the mic.
Right.
So the best thing is for you to do scratch vocals in the studio, get the artist warmed up and get them to know the song, and then pick a mic at that point. And that makes you do a better guess at what will work. That's what I find best. On stage, I just pick what works. If it's live, I will not wear out the artist's vocals. That's just ridiculous.
Yeah.
You know, these guys come tired and they come with whatever problems they have, and you know,
long day at the golf course.
Long day at the golf course. You know, we don't want to wear them out.
Sure.
You know, we've got their attention for a few minutes, and that's all we got. And sometimes you don't even have a few minutes, so you have to make an educated guess at what's going to work for that night.
Okay. How about you?
Well, again, having worked for Vince for so long, back in the day when we were looking for different microphones, I could rarely get him to try more than one or two at a time, because, you know, patience and
attention span
and all that, just and in Johnny's regard, he trusts me. He wants me to use what works for me. And Sam, the monitor engineer, as well. I mean, as long as we can deliver him what he wants to hear out of his wedges, it doesn't matter if he was singing on a, well, I won't make a reference to anything, but it doesn't, you know, that's Johnny's point's well taken, is that he wants it to work for us. He did make a comment one day, maybe, I don't know, 6 or 8 months ago. He said, mind you, I've worked for him for a really long time. He says, when are we gonna try a microphone that I like? And I said, well, we can try one right now. I just happen to have Ryan had just given me a SM86 to try. I said, here's a new microphone. Let's try it right now. So we plugged it in. Sam got a monitor sound on it. I went out front. Neither one of us liked it. So we asked Vince how he liked it. And he said, it's okay. You know, yeah, I think it's all right. So we used it for about 3 days. And Sam and I, again, still didn't like it. So we just switched back to the 87C, and he's never noticed the difference. So there you go.
There you go.
Fortunately, they look a lot alike, so, yeah. You know.
Let's talk about processing. Is there a standard processing chain that you use that you'll just start with, or do you just sort of pick it depending on the song and the artist and the day?
Definitely going to be different for live and studio.
Okay.
I know I try to start with the mic pre-on board on console. That
and what is
work.
The console?
PM4000.
Okay.
It seems to be fine. You can add compression. For somebody who sings as soft as my lead vocalist sings, he pretty much doesn't constitute a compressor, but the only reason I use it is for another gain stage.
Okay.
Also have a parametric EQ in line with his vocal to notch out some 315 that he's real heavy in his vocal.
Do you gate it at all?
No.
Okay.
No. I've heard guys try to do that on a live thing, and I'm not. Less is more for me, so I don't think I would do that.
What is the volume level on stage like? Is it
our stage volume is really good because the only thing we have that would create the most racket is the drum kit. Our guitar player has two matchless amps that he's playing through, but he's really cool about letting us. If we're in a small theater or something, he's really good about letting us put him off to the side behind a wall so it doesn't affect the stage volume. And now that we've gotten a drum shield in the last 6 weeks, that's even helped out tremendously a whole bunch more. Usually I could pretty much mic the whole deck with my lead vocalist mic because of the gain I have to get out from it since he sings so soft. And now that we have the headsets, those were adding to that sibilance coming through there as well. But the drum shield has taken care of that, and it's a much cleaner output altogether on vocals. But we also have a small Leslie that doesn't create a lot of noise, but again, keyboard players are really cool about letting us tuck it behind stage somewhere. So the only really ambient thing I've got coming off stage is a drum kit. And the snare drum is pretty loud itself. So,
Hugh, what about you?
I use a DCL, half of a DCL 200 Summit, and I take the output of that and run into a Brooks Siren 901 bandwidth limiter on Vince's vocal and use that as an insert. And I actually have an EQ on the output of the 901 that I use to touch up, fine-tune things after the show starts. Again, he's got a tremendous overtone at 160 hertz. And if I just take 160 hertz out of his vocal, then it's thin when he's singing in a higher register. He's singing in a lower register, the 160 hertz becomes very prevalent, so the bandwidth limiter catches that 160 hertz. And there are a couple other problem areas in his vocal. When he reaches the top of his range, his vocal gets very thin, around 3K, 3.5K, so I put another filter there. So as he hits these problem areas, take the edges off the gain differences with the 200, with the Summit 200, and when he hits these problem frequencies as he's going through different keys, because there's a different problem frequency for each key he sings in, the 901 grabs those frequencies for me and keeps me from having to jerk his EQ around all night.
That's what I call the gospel tenor syndrome.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. We call it the bluegrass syndrome. Because we have Jeff White's also in our band, another bluegrass singer, and he's not the lead vocalist, so it's not such a big deal with him. But keeping that lead vocal out front and on top all the time without having these things bloom in the PA is critical for me having a good night or not having a good night. And it's especially evident when we go do TV shows and I don't have the benefit of that insert in the TV truck or in the recording truck. That's when I wind up chasing those EQ patterns around later on when I mix the show.
Ah, interesting. Emma, what do you do?
I have somewhat of a standard. In studio, I have my favorite gear, you know, the Summit, just the standard, you know, high-end stuff that we see at every recording studio. But I also use the Summit DCL-200A for live, and I go through a Knight Technologies unit that allows for air. It has an air filter that's very nice on vocals. That I would recommend highly for people to play with. It's a lot of fun. We're engineers, so we like toys.
Say that again.
Other than that, you know, I've been toggling back and forth between the PM4000 Yamaha board and Midas XL4, and I try to use what's available to me on the board first, and then try to enhance it with some outboard. And, you know, always keeping the noise floor as low as I can keep it.
I'll take
Ben?
It.
Yeah.
I think the mic free certainly is important to the microphone to me. I want something that's mighty powerful sounding. And depending where I'm at, various studios have different things here in Nashville. But I'll either use a Neve 1073. I have a rack at Day Kings that I like to use a lot on. The Day King mic pre seem really full and yet present at the same time. So also have an Amec 9098 that I've had really good luck with, and followed by a really good either a Neve compressor or LA-2A or Tube Tech. And, you know, some combination of the mic pre and the compressor, you know, I'll find my magic lead vocal sound. So. And I don't hammer it in the processing department to tape. I, you know, get it sounding as good as I can, but, you know, I don't want to, if I'm for not the one that's going to mix it, I don't want to tie anybody's hands once they get to the mix stage, so.
Good. And Gary, you said the mastering labs or the...
Yeah, usually mastering lab and GML EQ and GML compressor. That's, you know, pretty much what I'll cut and overdub most everything through, just because the kind of music I'm doing is, you know, more acoustic and I just want... transparency. You know, I want a compressor that's not gonna change the sound when it's hit really hard. It just seems to still stay really open on the top, even when it's smacked pretty good. You know, Dolly is hard. Dolly's real tough to record because she's just from, you know, way down whispery stuff to all out. And that compressor was designed around her. George was. Designed that when he was cutting Linda and Dolly on that first trio record. You know, they're both nightmares to record because of those dynamics. But I just really stick with those two. And I've been changing it up on backgrounds just to get a little bit different character. You know, lead is almost always through that path. And lately I've been using the new 1176, or it's the... preamp EQ and compressor all in one, 6176.
Yeah, the universal.
Yeah, and I love that. That's really been fun because I'm also trying to change things up. It's like I'm kind of tired of what we've been doing and just want things to sound a little bit different, and that piece sounds really nice. Just not as much control on the compressor. The GML compressor is just so smart. I mean, I can set it up to respond exactly the way I want to for any given vocalist. It's just...
Yeah, once you figure out those knobs.
Yeah, and then...
I haven't yet.
No, and then you're trying to figure those out, and then you work with George and Massenberg, and he's not using any of it, you know. He's not, you know, he's not using any of the tricky stuff, the hysteresis, whatever it is. And yeah, he's using it in its bare bones setup.